Welcome to the Garage Spiel Podcast. This podcast is brought to you by your friends at Bomb Tools Unlimited, Stallwilly Tools North America, and Eurodiagnostic Resources. Learn more at www.bombtools.com, www.stallwilly.com, and www.eurodiagnostics.com. Bomb Tools Unlimited, Stallwilly Tools North America, and Eurodiagnostic Resources are proud to underwrite this Garage Spiel podcast. In this episode, we talk with Mike Almond, President of Diagnostic Solutions Incorporated of Newmarket, Ontario, Canada.
I'm here with Mike Almond at Diagnostic Solutions in Toronto, Canada. And we figured we'd have a sit-down and a chit-chat about what's going on with our industry and our profession as a whole. Mike has been in this business for probably as long as I have here, and I've got some questions I need to ask him because I'd really like an open and frank opinion from him. Thanks for coming, Mike.
Thanks.
One of the questions I think is the top question I've been wanting to ask and do ask pretty much everybody is, what do you think is the number one tool that most of these guys need in this profession? Where our technology is at right now?
I think the biggest thing is information. Getting the right information, either from a manufacturer or aftermarket sources, wherever you can get it. Even from groups and technical sites or whatever, just getting the information on how to fix these newer cars.
Where do you find the biggest issue with information is up here in Canada?
I think a lot of it is people up here. There's a big ethnic community up here. There's a language issue. So in all data, Mitchell are all basically, you know, written in English. A lot of these guys coming into this country, they have an issue with English. So, you know, not only have they problem reading this stuff or writing it or even reading the tools we're working with, scanners and whatever else, there is some issues with English.
Yeah. Well, so what do you think is, let's say, the number one tool that every technician should have in their toolbox?
All data Mitchell is the most important or equivalent, you know,
scan tool wise. Now, you know, I get this question all the time. Do you have a tool that does everything?
Yeah.
Now, what, 20 years ago?
Yep.
You probably could.
Yep. Now, no way.
No how, no way.
No.
And now, you know, I think what really fixes most of the cars is coding and programming.
Yeah, a lot of it.
You know, because, you know, in the old days when the car had a miss, let's see, bad plug, bad wire, dead hole.
Yeah.
It's not like that anymore.
Nope.
Now, what you do a firmware or a software update on the DME,
yep,
and all of a sudden, oh, there went the drivability issue.
Yep, yep. So I tell guys now when they're asking me questions about that, I tell them that basically before you try to fix this car, go and look for TSVs. Where are you going to find the TSVs? Whatever site you can. Or Mitchell, All Data are coming in more and more now with TSVs that they have in their system. They're looking at the manufacturers for drivability TSVs and stuff like that that they're putting in that guys can go and look, because I tell guys, you can spend 3-4 hours on this car changing pieces and diagnosing stuff, and then you go and look and there's a TSB for exactly your problem.
So, you know, the way that the whole technology thing is moving in our industry and profession, I'm sure without, you know, even thinking about it, you can definitely agree with me on the fact that the technician has got to get a whole lot more techie.
Right.
So what do you find related to this profession and industry? Do you find that training is really important?
Absolutely.
How do the guys look at it?
Cost. They just, you know, how much should I spend? There's some guys out there that just allocate X number of dollars a year to training, and they'll spend that money and then they're done. Other guys just take everything they can get their hands on. Other guys just will not spend money, no matter
now,
what you do.
Now, you know, one of the things that I find being I do a lot of tech support for a number of companies is getting these calls for these guys that have issues on cars, yet they don't even know how the system works. And needless to say, being you do sell scan tools and you travel around a lot, I'm sure you see this particular problem very rampant.
The biggest problem with I find with tech support, and I do a lot of tech support with all my customers, is they will call me and they'll say, I got this problem, and I checked with the scanner. I said, what's the code? Well, hang on a minute. Let me go check. And I'm on hold while they're going checking. What model is the car? Let me go check, you know? And many years ago, I had a friend who did tech support, and that was the biggest thing that killed him, is guys would not have the information. They're the same with the jobbers. They call for parts. They don't know the year. They don't know the make, the model. It's a crapshoot, and they're on the phone for 10 times as long as they should be because they don't get the information first.
And
I'm sure you run into that.
Oh, yeah, all the time. And as a point to that, too, just in a nutshell, what is the most frustrating thing that you see in this profession? The thing that frustrates you more often than anything?
Basically, guys not doing the basics. You know, a guy's got a no-start condition, and he hasn't even done the basics.
And see, that's almost exactly
the
same thing.
And then he's calling me for help.
Yeah, that's almost the same thing that I go through almost every day where I get a guy that gets a call that has an issue on the car, yet he didn't bother checking the battery, didn't bother checking the grounds, didn't bother checking the charging system, didn't bother checking for AC ripple. And, you know, everything electronic or electrical starts at the battery. Okay, in your estimation, what would you estimate the percentage of the shops that are with the technology, with the information, and with the right equipment, based on what you see every day? Because I know that you travel all over the frickin' place, and you see a lot of people
probably
during the week.
Probably 30%.
That's sad. As we are supposed to be professionals.
Yep.
I truly believe that there is maybe a handful of guys out there that do have the right equipment, the right information resource, and the smarts to diagnose the car, which is not an easy task to do in these days.
Yep. Some of this stuff is very difficult. That's why a lot of guys don't even want to get involved in diagnostics. They want to just fix. And I had a guy work for me many years ago who couldn't understand diagnostics, and he used to say, you know, there's always going to be a place for me doing brakes and front end. But they're all electronic now.
Yep.
So, you know, this guy's out there. He's 40, 50 years old now, but,
well,
knowing electronics, the guy's out there just on a whim and a prayer.
What are most of the parking brakes anymore on these European? They're all electronic parking brakes.
Yep.
You can't even bleed the system
without
the proper software.
Right.
I know you have been a previous shop owner. You've had your shop for what, 25 years?
25 years, roughly.
Okay. Based on just that, against what you're dealing with now, okay, do you think the technician has to overall be a smarter worker with what he's doing?
Way smarter. Way smarter. I tell guys when they're on about the cost of a job, like 60, 70% of the cost of the job is looking up information and trying to find out what's going on with the car, not doing the job.
Well, tell you what, give me some of the background of what you have as far as experience in the automotive business.
I started back in the 50s in the UK. That's where I served my apprenticeship, five-year apprenticeship. I came to Canada in the mid-60s. I worked for multiple different places, SO, different companies like that. In 72, I started my own shop, and I ran that shop. I had a 11-bay shop, 9 guys working for me, and, you know, we used to work 5-6 days a week. Most of my guys were pretty smart guys. We did all the training. We had the equipment, but there's always somebody out there wants to do the job cheaper, and people just wander off to the cheaper guy. It's not going to be cheaper in the long run. It's going to cost you more.
Yeah, well, being a shop owner myself for at least that many years, I know for a fact that you get what you pay for.
Exactly. You get exactly what you pay for. Yeah.
You know, and based on that, because we are talking about investing in ourselves in this profession, because there's nothing more than I would like to see in this particular profession that we are professionals. And I've always looked at this whole technology thing that we're all moving into now, that you're either going to move with this technology or you're going to die.
You're going to die. But, you know, a lot of these guys don't die. They just limp. They limp for year after year. And I go into shops and they ask me, you know, how's business out there? Oh, it's picking up. It's picking up. I'm still really slow. And I just say to some guys, just take a look in the mirror and take a look around. The most important thing right now is a reception area, where if you get, like, we know in the Toronto area now, over 50% of customers are women. You get a woman coming in there in a business suit or nice clothes, and you look around, there's nowhere to sit. They've got some old couch on the floor there that nobody's going to see. The washrooms are dirty. That doesn't cut it anymore. You need a reception area with a nice area to sit, a nice washroom that's clean, and a magazine rack that's not 20 years old, that if people do have to wait, and people do have to wait, there's something to do. Well, guys are putting TVs on the wall now.
Yeah, you know? I've got a number of people I know that are in this profession still, and they have taken it to that part.
Yep.
One of our other guests, Kirk Hillebrand with Young Street Garage.
Yep, I know Kirk very well.
He's got a very professional-looking operation because he knows now that people that come in to have their cars repaired, for the whole most part, they got to wait.
Yep.
And so if you're going to have customers that got to wait for the cars, whether it's 10 minutes or 2 or 3 hours, their comfort is as important as getting their car fixed.
That's right. Yep. So you have to do that.
So another question I have here is, you know, with all the shops that you're in, what are mainly the makes that you see most prevalent? By that, I mean European, Asian, or domestic cars.
The general shops I go in, I think you're probably looking at 50% domestic, 30% Asian, 20% European. And then you have your specialty shops, which, not specialty, but the guys who are doing Asian, European, and don't work on domestic. So they're probably 50-50.
You know, I always found, at least when I was doing this and had my shop, that it was kind of hard just to work on one make a car.
Yeah, it is.
Because, you know, you'd have a customer that have an S-Class Mercedes.
Yep.
But his wife was driving around a Tahoe.
Right. Yep.
You know, I always found that I had to be able to have the equipment, the resources, the software, the diagnostics to cover that whole range of cars.
Yep.
So these shops that, you know, you deal with that they specialize.
Yep.
So let's say they specialize in Mercedes and BMW. They don't touch any other vehicle.
Very few of those around. Very few. I think the majority of guys working on Mercedes, BMW are also doing Volkswagen, Audi, Saab, Porsche. They'll do any of the German stuff.
Based on that, do you know, is it more profitable to work on these European cars than this on the domestic cars?
Absolutely. But also the cost of the tools are more. You know, you're doing anything on a BMW, Camlock tools, $700-800.
Yeah, well, that's true. You know, that's true.
You don't need those tools for domestic. Not the same.
So how are those shops that are, let's say, specializing in the German cars? Are they pretty much busy?
Yeah, busy all the time. Because I find that a guy who's driving even a Volkswagen will usually pay. They know if they go to the dealer, they're going to pay. They need a timing belt on a TDI, it's going to be a grand. So they know the dealer's going to want a grant. So if they go in there and it's $900 or whatever, they pay it. You get some guy with a Chevy and has to come in for, you know, just minor repairs. It's a sob story and they're crying and they're. But the European drivers don't do that. They're driving something they figure special, if it is special, and they pay. They pay, no problem at all.
How receptive are most of the guys, shop owners, technicians, how receptive are they to all of this new technology? Do they show an interest? Do they tend to shy away? I mean, you know, this question is important to me because I'd like to feel that guys, let's say my age and your age, because I know when this whole thing first went into fuel injection, then into diagnostic tools, it excited me. Yes. It was a challenge for me.
Yep.
To be honest with you, I didn't even think about the money I could make.
No. Nope.
It was a challenge because anybody can work on a 1970 Ford. Not everybody can work on a 2007 Mercedes.
Right.
So are most of these guys, shop owners, technicians, receptive to this new technology? Or do you feel that they're kind of scared of it?
I don't think they're really scared of it. I think a lot of them are, they want to do it. They just don't have the, trying to think of the right word here. They're afraid to get too involved because if they're not sure, it's going to be expensive. So if they make a mistake, it's going to be expensive.
And so I guess this is where training comes in?
Absolutely. You know, the basics. I find that when this technology started to change back in the mid-70s, when we first started to go to computers and all the rest of it, everybody figured that the computers wouldn't last, especially when we're working in the north like we are, where we get snow and salt. These things are just not going to work. They have worked really well. And I think that most of the problems we're having are not with the actual computers or the components. It's the connections in between that are causing the problems.
Yeah, from point A to point B.
Exactly. Guys are looking for the big problem, the big component being the problem.
Such as a simple thing like B plus and grounds.
Exactly.
So where do you think this profession and industry is going? I mean, based on everything we've talked about today, what are you seeing in the future for this profession?
I think one of the biggest problems we've got in this profession now are basically the cost of tools. That is what's killing it. We're not getting people coming into it. This is another subject, but people, you know, they can go out there as an electrician, a plumber, carpenter, and in this city anyway, and they can make way more money than a technician can. And the cost of their tools are very minimal.
Now, you know, my opinion on what it costs to, let's say, open a shop now, because based on 30 years ago, what did it cost to open a shop? Well, let's see, a set of tools, a rental spot, a floor jack, pretty much.
Yep.
What's the cost to open a real facility now?
You know,
a couple hundred thousand?
More. Like an apprentice now needs to spend a couple of grand on tools just to get in the door of a shop. And it never ends. It never ends. You know, when I came to this country, I had three bills. I had my rent, my food, and Snap-on. And they were my staples for 20 years.
And you know, and like I said before, you know, one of the big tools now is a laptop. You know, I remember my brother asking me one time, you know, this goes back when I guess I had my shop 5 years. Now, this was my second shop as I moved back to Central Florida. And one day he turned around after he saw what I spent with Snap-on, and he said, when is this going to end?
It's never going to end.
Well, yeah, it does when they shovel the dirt on your face.
Yeah, right, but that's the end. That's the real end. You know, like, I mean, a guy can go in as an electrician now, and he's got a leather belt, which he picks up for, I've never priced him, maybe $50.
Yeah.
You know, he's got four or five different sizes of screwdrivers, a meter, and he's in business.
Yep.
And that's it. That's all he's going to spend. He may get an exotic drill at some point, which he likes because of the color or whatever, but he doesn't have to buy those tools. You got a tech these days, it never ends.
In our economic situation, the way the global economy is going, which lately it hasn't been too well, have you been seeing a lot of shops going out of business due to not necessarily the economic situation, but because, let's say, the shop doesn't have the technology to keep up with the cars that are coming in there?
No, I don't think there's many going out of business. I think they're all, they're cutting back. They're cutting back on what they're spending any way they can. And the training is going to be the first thing they cut back on. We're getting more and more parts replacing shops out there that are trying to switch parts from one car to another. And I tell guys, those days are gone. You cannot switch parts anymore.
Do you know how many calls I get on guys telling me that, I got a 05 745i out here that the cluster went out, so we put a used cluster in it.
Yep. Oh, yeah.
How come now the car don't start and nothing works? You know what that all goes back to again? Training.
Training. Knowing you can't do that anymore.
Yeah, you know, the guesswork anymore. You know, like the good old days where if you made a mistake, it was what, a $20 relay?
Right, yep. Yep.
Now you're talking, what, $2,000 for a cluster?
Yep.
Yeah, that's the times they are a-changing as far as that is concerned.
Even things like we run into a problem with Ford alternators where the regulator is inside the alternator and it's basically matched to the ECU. And I had guys putting rebuilt alternators in 2 hours at a time. One guy put seven alternators in trying to get this light to go out. It's charging its heart out, but the light will not go out because the voltage between the regulator and the ECU have got to be matched.
Yeah, well, anymore, you know, like in the old days, the way the charging system worked, it worked on opposing voltages.
Yep.
Now the DME
tells
the charging system when to work and when not to charge.
And I tell guys, most of this is getting back to fuel economy because the manufacturers are doing, originally we got away from like direct drive fans to electric fans to save on, you know, the draw on the system as far as horsepower, just to save on fuel. And now they're trying everything to get the fuel fine-tuned down to cutting out the alternator, cutting in the alternator, anything to save fuel.
Yeah, well, that's part of getting cleaner, getting more efficient.
Yep.
And with that comes that much more technology.
Yep.
I guess one of the important questions that I've been wanting to ask you is, are the techs in this country here, do they have to be certified? Do they take a test? Are they tested every year?
Yeah, they have to be certified. But once you're certified, that's it. There's no reoccurrence of tests. You don't have to go and be certified again every 5 years or anything like that. It's a one-time certification.
What's your opinion on guys in our profession? Should they all be certified and tested on a regular basis?
No, I don't think so. I think once you're certified, you know, there's no need to go back and get... We don't even do that with teachers here, so I don't think technicians need to be. But I think that, you know, these guys have to be taught that training is important, and they have to spend a certain amount of their time on training.
Well, anymore, training is just another tool in your box.
Yeah, I mean, they have to understand that whatever they spend on tools or training, they have to get back. So, you know, a guy told me a long time ago, you very rarely will get a guy who is a great technician and a good businessman. They're either a businessman or a technician, but to get the two together is very difficult.
Check out more of our Garage Spiel podcasts at www.euroautotraining.com.